and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 152. On this week's show, we're going to review the 1980s classic Midnight Madness and discuss the Disney news of the week. Joining me, as always, to my left is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Joining us via Skype, you miserable monster of a program, up in the Carolinas from the Main Street Gazette, is Ryan Wilson. Say hello, Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
And his cohort in crime from the Carolinas is none other than Courtney Van Rens. Say hello, Courtney.
Hello, Courtney.
Hello, Pete. And yeah, I want to welcome everybody to this episode of Disney Magic Hour. It's brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, or traveling anywhere, maybe a brewery, maybe the huge M mini golf course, maybe. Visit the experts over at mei-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. We are lastgenpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Main hub of activity, though, got to say, it's a Facebook page. That's a Disney Magic Hour. Search for that. Add yourself. Add your friends. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, or however else you stumbled into this. Sorry. And Melissa, we also have pictures and Patreons. Where is that?
We do on Instagram. We're at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you head over to patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour, you can find ways to support the show there.
Ryan, the Main Street Gazette, where can everyone find that?
It's at mainstgazette.com. On Twitter and Instagram, it's mainstgazette. And if you search for Main Street Gazette on Facebook, you can find the page there too.
Folks, we're here. We're here. It's taken a couple of opportunities, couple of tries, but we're all here, and we're here to talk about a movie near and dear, maybe to my heart, maybe, I don't really know, we'll figure that out later, Midnight Madness. Now, we have some movie stuff to bring to talk about as well. We have some news of the week, but I was worried that I might get what's what I'm looking for? I don't know. Saskatooned? Is that a term that someone can use for ambushed?
I have literally no idea what you're talking
about. That's a good way. So I was afraid someone was going to Saskatoon me. So, guys, I brought a friend with me. Someone who understands, someone who knows the beauty of the Midnight Madness. And here he is! Brian Bogad. Brian!
Hi!
Hello, yay. Brian.
How's it going?
It's good.
Yeah.
Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
For those of you who don't know, Brian Bogad lives in New York. That's all I have on him.
I live on Long Island.
Long Island. Brian.
It's like its own state.
These people are going to attack me and the movie that is amazing. And so you are here. You are back in the fold to protect me from these monsters.
I don't know if Brian's going to like protect you so much as maybe be like, you know, the central point of it's maybe good because you were watching when you were young, but watching it now is
a better experience. You're right.
It's like a fine wine. It just gets better with age.
Yeah. It does. I don't understand. Evidently, Courtney has a crick in her neck because she keeps shaking.
Yeah.
I'm the bent neck lady.
Oh.
Just threw a wrench in that.
I just started watching that, so don't spoil it for me.
I'm not saying anything else.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we first have news. This is very momentous, but we have news. Number one, don't use Skype. That's my first news of the day. That's just a helping hand to everyone out there. Burn Skype to the ground.
It's doing it to itself.
It's what?
It's doing it to itself.
It is. I tell it that I love it, but then it just makes me hit it in the face. Okay. Something big happened this last week. We're going to talk about that first. Of course, it was the passing of Stan Lee. Stan Lee, at the age of 95, I think can safely say achieved more than any one person can honestly dream of. But he has passed away. To list everything that he did in his career would take an entire episode. But here's just some of the characters that he created, co-created with Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Spider-Man, the X-Men, Fantastic Four, Doctor Doom, Silver Surfer, the Hulk, Daredevil, Iron Man, Thor, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, Ant-Man, Falcon, even the Inhumans. You no doubt recognize nearly every character there, because even if you aren't someone who reads comics, more than likely if you listen to this show, you watch movies, and these have all been people, characters that have been made very, very popular over the last 10 and a half, I guess, years now of Marvel. And that's just the legacy that the man leaves behind, but it goes beyond that. And while these have all been like really entertaining films, when these characters first came out, there's a lot to them beyond that, especially someone like Spider-Man, the X-Men, Falcon, the Hulk, Black Panther, very specifically. Stan Lee was not someone who just sort of sat by and was like, hey, just have fun with these funny books. He did that, but he did that while also putting across a message. And it's a very key thing. So if you're kind of wondering why everyone is so enamored with somebody who, you know, made comics, it's because it went beyond that. And to kind of back that up, I'm just going to use Stan's words himself, because I want you to think about this also. Whenever you hear somebody say, I don't want them to politicize my movies. Well, how about this? This is Stan's soapbox. He used to do this all the time in the Marvel books. And they actually have the books he wrote. And they actually have a collected edition of this. You can actually get a large collection of the Stan soapbox. So this is Stan Lee's words himself. From time to time, we receive letters from readers who wonder why there's so much moralizing in our mags. They take great pains to point out that comics are supposed to be escapist reading and nothing more. But somehow, I can't see it that way. It seems to me that a story without a message, however subliminal, is like a man without a soul. In fact, even the most escapist literatures of all, old-time fairy tales and heroic legends, contained moral and philosophical points of view. At every college campus where I may speak, there's as much discussion of war and peace, civil rights, and the so-called youth rebellion as there is of our Marvel mags per se. None of us live in a vacuum. None of us is untouched by the everyday events around us, events which shape our stories just as they shape our lives. Sure, our tales can be called escapist, but just because something's for fun doesn't mean we have to blanket our brains while we read it. Excelsior, Stan Lee. And I don't think that couldn't be more poignant for right now. And it just shows that's the man's impact. That is Stan the man's impact. So thank you so much to Stan Lee as he leaves his characters, in my opinion, in the hands of Joe Quesada. But if you want to say Kevin Feige, that works just as well, I guess. Ryan, I'm sure that was a big thing this week, obviously. Mm-hmm. So cats like me and you specifically and everyone else. But what were your thoughts immediately upon learning that that he had finally passed?
It was, I found out my wife actually texted it to me, and literally the word was, just, I literally just responded, no. I was like, that's not where this is. Like, that's not where we are. It was a gut punch. He has an amazing legacy. It's a complicated legacy, but it's an amazing legacy. He's done so much for putting in social commentary into what you read. And, you know, he's not singularly responsible for that, but he had, you know, his thumbprint and his fingerprints are all over everything in the Marvel universe. I went and pulled out old, you know, collections I got from it as a child that were Stan Lee's, and I've been rereading them, and some of the old Captain America, some of the old Spider-Man. And it's a turning point. And, you know, he's not really been hands-on in Marvel for decades now, but he still had that presence, and I still kind of was thinking, what would Stan do?
Absolutely, 100%. So that's the end of an era by all means, an end of an era. And look, guys, I don't think that they shot his next 36 cameos, as someone told me recently. That's a lot. That's a lot of movies to know in advance. Yeah. But maybe we'll see him one or more other times, possibly. I don't think so, though. Well, I would imagine...
Two.
Yeah, I would think that there was something in there. That's right. That would be in there. Maybe even Spidey, too.
Yeah, I was thinking possibly. Yeah. I don't know if they got all the way to that, but yeah. That would probably be the last one.
In other news, a little more uplifting, not as sad as the passing of someone that everyone had a fatherish kind of thing with. Anyways, Toy Story 4.
Is that why I don't care?
Hey. Kind of out of nowhere, dropped a trailer. And they dropped not only a trailer, but then a reaction trailer, which is quite smart of the people over at Pixar. But the first trailer, a bit of a melancholy-ish yeehaw scene of all the characters in a big circle
dancing. I don't think it was melancholy.
Everything in Toy Story is melancholy.
No. Well,
you're not wrong.
Yeah.
For anybody who's seen Love Actually and has that song in another context, it definitely felt like it had a melancholy undertone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that poster was put out and it was like, okay, what are you trying to tell us? Anyways, all the little softy feelings that you might feel while watching that trailer is uprooted when a spork with arms, a spork made into, a toy with arms, starts screaming out, "I'm not a toy!" Reminiscent of the old Buzz Lightyear.
But he says, "I don't belong here," too.
Yeah, and the second movie, Buzz Lightyear, where he thought he wasn't a toy again. And they didn't do that in the third, I don't believe. Or did they? No, they didn't. So, Toy Story 4. Sporks brings up a crazy question.
Why is he named Forky?
Nope, not that.
That's my question.
If someone makes a toy, do they gain a soul?
Yes. They gain sentience.
Is that how that works?
I think that's the question.
I think it's instead of every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings, a soul is born into a toy.
That's terrifying.
That's the way it goes. Yeah.
I don't know if that's... No, that's pretty scary. It's not as scary as what happens when you open the car door in the cars. But to think that these poor things are just being created... And then they have no idea where they are. They don't know what they're doing.
I think that's the bigger question. Because his initial goal was, I'm going to be a utensil. I'm going to be used to deliver food to...
Wait, are you saying now the utensils have sentience?
No, well, now his goal is not to be a utensil. It's to be something completely different. And he doesn't know what he has to be now.
Wait, we still have to get the first question answered, though. But if it knows that it has a goal, then you're saying it understands that it is a spork? Courtney, help me.
It understands that now it is not anymore just a spork.
The way that the trailer was presented, you have to assume that the spork was sentient before it became a toy.
So that I don't.
You have to assume that.
Oh my god!
It knows.
To be fair, if we're gonna use Disney canon, I mean, the forks and knives jump around in Beauty and the Beast all the time.
Beauty and the Beast, yeah.
That was a spell, though. It was a spell.
Yeah.
But Sid made all of those creepy toys that were all a mishmash of other things too, and they were all sentient. So
yeah, they were. They were originally toys, though.
But we know they feel pain because when Woody got burned in that scene, he felt pain.
He did. He ran around .
Yeah, this is gonna get dark.
Man, all right. So,
well, and then you have to consider the Forky poster where he has a spoon in one hand, a fork in the other, and there's a rainbow on his foot. And I'm like, oh, are we introducing an LGBTQ toy?
Yes.
Is that where we're going? Because I'm great with that.
Dude,
holy
I saw
Christ,
a huge,
that's wait, exactly wait. What that is. Oh, my
I
God.
I saw a huge post about this, about how he totally represents that community. He's like, I don't, know who I am anymore. I don't belong with these, people who are very cookie cutter. Yeah.
Because he's not quite a fork and he's not quite a spoon.
Yep.
Oh, wow. All right.
That's good.
I can, yeah, sure. Okay. So that came out. And then the next day... They actually released a reaction video to the trailer, which was very smart because that got so many results. And it introduced two other characters, Duck and Bunny, as voiced by Key and Peele. And if you know Key and Peele, that is the valet skit that they were kind of leaning into a little bit, especially when one of them started running away. And To Infinity and Your Mom Was Born. And I should sell that on T-shirts. I would buy one immediately.
You can make one.
I can make one. You can.
I like the one where he's like, and a blonde. I don't know what it was before that, but I like that part.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a, has a the first two things that they showed has a really fun vibe. I'm in.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, definitely.
Melissa?
I mean, I'm kind of weirded out by the captive Spork. I feel like he's a captive.
Oh, we're going to find out.
I'm real nervous about it. I was like, Jesus, this was much darker than I was anticipating. I was like, what the hell? I sat down and watched it with Jim, and his face was like, what just happened?
So we'll find out next summer, right? Next summer?
June.
Next summer, yes.
Yep. But that's like 7 months away, 8 months away. It feels like so far, but close at the same time.
Yeah, like D23 announced a whole bunch of their, you know, hey, we've got all these events coming up, and they're going to be doing a magical screening of Temple of Doom, which those words together in a sentence are hysterical to me. But it was in September, and I was like, September? That's like a decade from now. So
10 months.
One other thing of news of note, The Mandalorian gains a Mandalore. Pedro Pascal, who you might remember having head issues on Game of Thrones, has been cast in Star Wars TV series coming to a Disney Plus produced by Jon Favreau. Oh, by the way, it's called Disney Plus. titled The Mandalorian. And I can only hope that someone says that consistently throughout the show. So, very cool casting. I like it. We don't know much else about the show. I'm assuming it's about a Mandalorian.
Do we know any other cast?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, he's been it so far.
He's the first one? Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And so, yeah, very excited to see that. I think that's a really good fit. He mixes right in. He's just a good actor, too. So it's really exciting that they're getting this type of power. Talking towards the whole Disney Plus thing, guess what? It's called Disney Plus. That's going to be the name of the new streaming service. And if you ever were wondering what they were going to do with their Marvel characters, well, there's going to be a multitude of series circling around the Marvel characters that you've seen in the movies. A Falcon Winter Soldier series is coming to the channel, along with a Loki I'm Totally Not Dead miniseries, and even a Scarlet Witch will get a dedicated series, which is interesting because... What's her name?
Elizabeth Olsen.
Thank you. Elizabeth Olsen was not too hyped on doing a Scarlet Witch solo movie, but she must have saw something that she really liked with the series, or just... They're giving them a lot of money. I don't know what's going on.
Probably a little bit of both. Maybe she just felt like her character could handle a TV better, like a series.
Episodic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this obviously gets everyone interested in what's going to happen at the end of Infinity War. I think it's pretty obvious with one of the points with Falcon and Winter Soldier, since they're kind of off on their own. But anyways.
They're both dust, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But they're fine. Obviously, everyone's fine. That's one of the big things of this is, you know, everyone's fine. Everyone's fine.
Okay, everything they've announced is either someone who's dead or dust to that.
Yeah. So, is that it? Is that going to be the big twist? Everyone who's dead is really alive, bro. It'll be the same people who hated Lost.
Is everyone alive then really dead?
Huh?
Is everyone alive then really dead?
That's what I just said.
No, you said everyone who's dead is really alive.
Well, okay, yes. And then the obvious... Okay, yes.
I think we've postulated that in the past.
You're a postulation.
Your mom's a postulation.
To infinity and your mom!
And your mom!
Are you guys going to pay for this, Disney Plus? Let's say it's $10 a month.
Yep.
Yeah, most likely.
Melissa?
I don't know. Are you going to pay for it?
Son of a bitch. Only if we take care of it, we gotta get rid of something else.
I don't watch Filmstruck.
Would you chade?
Filmstruck's going away, isn't it?
I know.
Filmstruck is going away, but they announced today that the Criterion channel is being renewed, and Guillermo del Toro even quoted my tweet. Melissa, would you trade if you had to? And this isn't like our situation, but I'm asking you.
No.
Would you trade Netflix for Disney Plus? Courtney's a hard
maybe,
no.
Maybe, but I don't know. It depends what... I don't know. Because we don't have regular TV. So, like I go to Netflix for TV shows. And right now, like, they're putting out pretty good ones. Although, I find Amazon ones a little bit better. I like those. They just don't come out as frequently. At least Netflix has a bunch of stuff that I can watch usually, you know.
Ryan, same question.
I'm in the middle ground. It's going to depend on what else with it right now. probably not. But if you tell me that I'm going to get the entire backlog of Disneyland television show, I'm going to get Zorro, I'm going to get some of the old some of those old pieces, then yeah, I'd probably be a yes.
I mean, I've even been down with, like, if they threw on, like, Gargoyles and Darkwing Duck, like, that era of cartoons.
Would,
like,
you be down with the sickness?
Yes.
Ooh-wah-ah-ah-ah. Courtney, would you, you were shaking your head. You wouldn't give up the Netflix for the Disney Plus just yet either?
No, I wouldn't. There's a lot of Netflix original stuff that I watch, and I continue to watch season after season.
Okay.
And stuff that's, like, that I can't get on Hulu, like Schitt's Creek, for example. Like, that comes on Netflix. Have you seen it?
No. Is it good? It sounds good.
Yeah, it's Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you need to watch it. I can't believe we haven't even talked about this.
Oh, no. Okay, I'll dive in there.
S-C-H-I-T-T apostrophe S, Creek.
Good. All right. That's
so good.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't give it up.
Brian, would you give it up?
At the moment, no. I just started, actually, the Hulu Plus with live TV because I'm getting rid of my satellite. And I mean, I get all the Disney. It depends. Like, I get all the Disney Channel stuff on there, so I can watch the new Star Wars. I have Star Wars Rebels. You know, I have access to that stuff. I have access to all the Marvel cartoons on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And I own all the movies, so it's not like I need it for the movies.
See, I'm torn. I almost feel like it would have to be like a month to month decision for me. Like, okay,
yeah,
you know, they put out The Mandalore. I'm going to watch that in within this month, and then.
Yeah.
I guess I have to activate this and I'll go back to Netflix for like a month.
Honestly, that's what I do with the WWE. I drop it. I watch it for a pay-per-view. I get like for this one coming up, I just got an offer for 99 cents for up through January 31st. I'll renew. As soon as Survivor Series is over, I will cancel it. And in 2 or 3 months, I'll get another one for WrestleMania.
Sweet Jesus. And what the hell am I doing? What am I doing?
I don't know. I don't know.
You're clearly not gaming the system like everyone else.
That's Gaiman. That's another thing. Good Omens is what? Amazon?
That's Amazon.
Yeah, that's going to be Amazon.
All right.
Yeah.
At least we have that one. Jesus.
Yeah, I can't cancel Amazon. I love.
I can't. She don't pay for it. I can't cancel Amazon. Hysterical.
Yeah, I cannot do it.
Hysterical.
I literally cannot do it.
All right. So there's the news, folks. We're going to get into our movie, Oh, the Week, bye week, however that works. And this week, sure. is we've officially entered the 80s. Midnight Madness, released on February 8th, 1980, coming in at a sweet runtime of 112 minutes, grossed just under $3 million.
What was that?
The Skype was being really weird. Cut out completely.
I believe it's just under $3 million. under $3 million at the box office when released.
Woo.
Resulting in a loss for the Disney company, but since has garnered a cult following, which also now holds its own Midnight Madness games every year. I looked it up, and yeah, there was one held this year in Jersey. That all adds up.
So let's be clear real fast. On the cult following, the word you left out and where you pulled that from is small cult.
Oh, you are. Hey, look. 17 people went to that event. 39 were interested, according to the Facebook event page. Okay? That's an actual stat also. I'm not making that one up. Other events. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ryan. Other events have been held, and the proceeds went to Raise Your Hands Charity. But I guess Ryan doesn't like charity now, huh? No, Ryan doesn't want charity.
Did the gross from the movie? I'm sorry. Did the negative from the movie go to charity? Because...
Just in case you're wondering, a 2019 event is planned. You can look on Facebook for something. When it was released, stop me if this shocks you, it did not get great reviews. I'm going to quote the classic Roger Ebert. The movie is such a big disappointment to me because I liked Junior High School, which was a previous movie from the filmmakers. I liked Junior High School so much. It's a pleasant, well-meaning comedy, and it's obviously trying for the same kind of innocent sophomoric humor that was so charming in junior high school, but it just doesn't have the same magic. A lot of its jokes miss. The pace is slow. There aren't too many characters. There are too many characters to keep track of, and there's an unpleasant streak of nasty humor directed at characters who are fat, ugly, old, or otherwise out of step with Southern California physical ideals. So why was Ebert disappointed? As he said, junior high school, Was the movie that they really liked. That was from the writer duo of Michael Nankin and David Wetcher, who grew up together. And while Nankin went to UCLA, Wetcher went to USC. So big background. And it was that short film, junior high school, that actually caught the eye of Ron Miller, who was at the time the VP, I believe, of Disney, or the right? Who offered them then a 6-month salary plus an office. And all of that led to Midnight Madness, which was first titled. Actually, Ryan, do you know what the first title is? This kind of encroaches onto your territory. I apologize.
Yeah, so it had two working titles, The All Night Treasure Hunt and The Ultimate Game. But this was, so Nankin and Wetcher had done actually two shorts together. They had done Junior High School and then also Gravity. And they had worked together. They had written, they had directed both of those together. They screened the one at FilmX. That's how Ron Miller came to be involved in the picture. And so as they were kind of building their film pitches, they came up, you know, they were avid gamers, and they came up with this idea of college students who had become contestants, and the city was actually the game board. And they went back to Miller and talked to him about that. And he had some interest in it, but he liked it better as an idea instead of the city with a game board, which you get in the movie. You get that with the tracking of kind of where the players are. But they were an all-night scavenger hunt. And so they took that. They made a 20-page treatment, then a 70-page outline. They knew that that was going to take them beyond their 6 months. So Ron Miller, liking what he had seen, gave them another half year, and they went to work on the production.
So, yeah, so then the production starts up, and, you know, it kind of goes totally unnoticed by history because I couldn't find a damn thing on it. It basically just happened.
It did go over time and budget.
It did? Oh, okay. But how much, though? Because they still had a very small budget.
It did. So it ended up running an additional 3 weeks due to they had some staff who were – some cast who were sick. They needed to do some night filming that took some time. So they ran closer to a 50-day schedule than they originally were supposed to.
Okay.
And the overages run between, depending on your source, one source I found said 500,000. The other said, you know, 1.5 million that they ran over budget. So either side of that's probably not great for kind of a small budget film.
Yeah, but fear not, though, because Nankin went on to direct and write a ton of television, including Flipper. Chicago Hope, and actually previous to Midnight Madness, he wrote the 1978 horror film The Gate. I don't know if anyone remember the
Gate. Yeah,
it's a good one. And Wetcher, for his part, has been an executive producer on Penn & Teller's Bullshit, which is incredible. And also even partook in the short-lived series Sledgehammer, if you guys remember that. I think that came as fast as it went. But Melissa...
Yes.
Are there people in this movie? Look, let me answer this first. There's a lot of people. We're definitely not going that far into the woods. Give me like three of them.
Okay, well.
Why don't we just go with Adam? Who's Adam?
Oh, he's a jerk. No, he's.
Very rude.
Bite your tongue.
Michael J. Fox is a complete douche.
Adam's played by David Naughton. Also known for An American Werewolf in London. And then he did a heck of a ton of TV shows. Way too many. But I'm going to give his one credit to Sharknado 5. Because that's what he deserves.
That's unfair to him. That's really unfair, honestly. He didn't write the script. He just got hired for it. Ice Cream Man looks pretty classy. Oh my God, Ice Cream Man with Clint Howard? He was in that? That's a good movie. Olivia Hussey's a good name.
For the week, folks.
What happened?
I said, and there's your Clint Howard reference for the week, folks.
Yeah, he did a million things in television.
Yeah.
Good for him. I wish I had a career like that. That would have been nice. Also, he was in, you know, this movie. Who else is in this movie?
I'm going to go to Laura next, another gem, played by Deborah Klinger, who is basically just a singer. She had a nickname, or a pseudonym, if you'd like, Super Chick, Super 70s. And she was part of the group, the Klinger Sisters, with her three other sisters.
Okay, cool.
And they made a few TV appearances.
Who else?
I guess we should go with...
Gotta talk about Harold. Gotta talk about Harold.
Well, I was going to talk about Scott.
Talk about Scott.
I kind of have
worst.
Grouped into teams. So we're on yellow team right now. Poor little Scott, baby Scott, played by Michael J. Fox.
Michael Fox.
Yeah, Michael Fox, not J. Fox. All right, he's a real actor right now.
All right,
depending
at that time,
on which
yeah,
side of the credits you're looking on.
That's right.
One side of the credits, he's Michael Fox. The other side of the credits, he's Michael J.
He grew up a lot during that movie.
Yeah, it took years off his life.
That's okay. He'll learn to time travel later.
Yeah, I mean, we all know his creds, right? Back to the Future, Teen Wolf.
I love how Teen Wolf is number two. I'm proud of you on that one. That's good. I love how I'm very, very happy that Teen Wolf was the one that was right behind Back to the Future.
Well, I mean, I could go with Homeward Bound.
Well, okay, Frighteners. Can we give a Frighteners? Or Frighteners. Cars, the original, also known as Doc Hollywood.
I have Doc Hollywood. I also have your favorite, Atlantis. Ooh. And The Lost Empire.
Yeah.
Or The Lost Empire, not
Atlantis. I got to rewatch that.
I like that one.
Bright Likes Big City did a lot of cocaine in that.
I never saw that.
Do you guys remember the Family Ties episode where, like, Alex's best friend kills himself? And it turned into it was almost like a one man play sort of. And he was going from all these fake rooms, you know, from room to room. It was, you know, a special episode of Family Ties, but it was just highlighting him. And I remember that a lot. Not a single line of dialogue, but like I can tell you what it looked like. Like I remember how it looked.
Yeah.
That was something. Light of Day, that's another good one. There's a lot of cocaine in that one too. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we can go on forever for his, but
we can. Yes, we can.
He did, lots of cocaine. Yes.
Yes.
you want Harold? We'll go to Harold. He's played by Stephen Furst. Animal House is probably the big one. He did a lot of TV series also, but he did a long stint on Babylon 5. And he did some voice work, including Buzz Lightyear video games. He was Booster.
Yeah. And was it Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea?
Yeah, he did a lot of voice work. Yeah. I didn't pull out all.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Voice work is the best.
That's what I found a lot of people, like, in the Disney live-action movies did. Like, if they didn't just stick with movies or TV, like, a lot of them went to voice work.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alf Loves a Mystery. That was a TV movie. He played a mole, or played someone named Mole. Yeah. Not really sure where it falls.
Speaking of voice work, Harold's girlfriend, Lucille, who's played by Patricia Alice Albrecht, she...
It's a good name.
Also did voice work. Probably most notably, she was in Gem and the Holograms.
Was she Gem?
She was Pizzazz.
Oh, wow.
And she was also on the Snorks. So, I mean, that's my childhood right there.
Wait, what was the thing with the Snorks? It was...
Sing along with the Snorks.
But it was like, it was the Smurfs.
Yeah. The Snorks were underwater.
The Smurfs underwater. Like, that was like canon, right?
No.
No? I thought it was.
They weren't.
No, but
blue.
They were basically Smurfs underwater. They had the woohoo coming out of the top of their heads.
Yeah.
That was the word.
That's the word. That's the noise it made.
Anybody else that you want to highlight in here? Because you know what? I don't know.
Well, yeah, no, I got to highlight Emilio. He was also...
Oh, you know, now you got to do this. All right.
I have a couple. There's just a couple. Emilio, Andy Tennant. I had to call him out because I didn't like him in this movie, but he's the director of one of my favorite movies. So I had to call him out on it. He directed Ever After.
Yeah, he sort of looks like Leo, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He does. It's crazy.
He was also in Grease and Grease 2.
Who is he in Grease?
A greaser.
Sure.
Yeah, that's it.
That's very specific.
I mean, yeah, I walked into that.
Other greaser.
Ferris Bueller had a TV show in the 90s?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, yep.
Man, we should stop doing things, I think.
Yeah.
Like, overall, stop doing things. All right. You feeling good about that?
Yeah. Do you want to know anybody else? Or
I don't know.
I have a few.
I don't know.
Paul Rubens was in it.
Yeah, Paul Rubens is in it. That's a cool thing.
Piglet's in it.
Piglet's in it. You can't skip over Piglet.
Oh, that's right. John Fielder is in this movie.
Yep.
Oh, man.
the one Donna, the red team girl, she voices Helen Lovejoy and Maude Flanders on The Simpsons.
Really?
Yeah.
Guess who is the most rich person in this list?
Her.
Oh my God, you're right.
I did my homework.
Jesus, she's loaded. Anytime I see Normal on The Simpsons, I'm like, my God, they just Scrooge McDuck their way into their homes. Good for them, people. They're good for them. Good for them. Good for them.
And of course, we have Wesley from the White Team, Mr. Eddie Deason, or Eugene from Grease.
Yeah. He had that roll down.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him. Honestly, it's a fun collection of people, and I know you guys have a lot of problems with the movies. Trust me, I know. But it's a fun collection of people.
I found out from this list that there was a movie called Gorp, and I don't understand what that is.
Gorp from Orp. Everyone knows Gorp from Orp.
No, just called Gorp.
I'm just kidding.
There are a lot of people in it. I don't understand.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to bring this up before. The cinematographer. The cinematographer is Frank Phillips, who also shot Black Hole and Bedknobs and Broomsticks. So if all of this looks terribly familiar, that's why. They're basically shot for shot the same film. You guys remember the Black Hole? All right. Courtney.
Yes?
In what I guess would be the most challenging week of the music section, what's going on here?
You know, the music was not challenging in this movie for me. The movie was challenging. As soon as it started, I was like, yes, this is awesome. I love this song. This is my jam. All the visuals that were happening at the same time, I was not really, game for. Mm-hmm. But the song was good. So the music is by Julius Wechter, who's the brother of director and writer David Wechter. So he has 3 composition credits on IMDb. So you've already mentioned Junior High School, which starred Paula Abdul, I should mention.
Wow, I did not know
also,
that.
Yeah.
Was she 6? How old was she?
Not very old, I would say.
Okay.
He also composed the score for Murphy's Law of Golf, which was another short, and Midnight Madness. So those are the 3 composition credits he has.
How does the song go?
For Midnight Madness?
Yeah. Do you remember it by any chance?
I mean, it starts to get to you.
Doesn't matter what you say. Doesn't matter what you do. It's a good song.
It's a great song. And that's not even the best part of the song. The best part of the song is the breakdown.
That's what I was just going to say. That's the best part right there.
Oh, it's so good. Okay. So Julius Wechter does not have a lot of composition credits to his name. However, he does have 31 soundtrack credits on IMDb, and that is for the song Spanish Flea. Anybody familiar with Spanish Flea?
I am not.
If you listen to it, I promise you would know it. He wrote it for what was the predecessor to music videos in 1966, and it was called a Herb Alpert and Tijuana Brass double feature. I watched this thing. It was 6 minutes of like crazy hot nonsense. There's a lot of animated butts in it.
I'm listening.
It is very, very strange. I promise you'll know the song. Play it right now. It's been in Shampoo, Beverly Hills Cop 2, NSDK, Striptease, The Simpsons, Ocean's 11, and lots of other things. If you can add that as a sound clip, Pete, you're welcome to do that, because I think that's fun for everyone to find out.
I am absolutely going to do that. Yes, I will do that later. You all should be hearing that song, and you all know it.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it's his claim to fame. That's like the whole reason this guy had a career. He was also a conservatory-trained percussionist. He did albums with Sonny and Cher. He did albums with Phil Spector. Oops. And
Wall of Sound.
What?
Wall of Sound and Bullets.
Yes. And he also played on Pet Sounds, the famous Beach Boys album.
Oh, nice.
That's pretty much... rap duo Helta Skelta sampled the theme song from this movie for their song of the same name, Midnight Madness. So that's what I know about Julius Wechter.
He worked on Pet Sounds, which the, what's his name? Brian Wilson housed Charles Manson, and then a rap duo called Helter Skelter covered his stuff.
No.
Wait, what happened?
Helter Skelter. All right.
Yeah, it's not. Sure. Yeah, don't make that mistake.
You gotta be gangsta.
Well, at least the movie isn't the only thing that's racist tonight. Alrighty then.
Hear it.
Let's go into the movies. We're going to the movies, folks. So the movie starts up, and I want to just say that I can't find the damn text. I am pretty sure that Courtney Van Rens herself said, "This may be my favorite movie of all time."
I did say that,
like,
for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, into the movie, I believe is what it does.
Yeah, I'll second that, because I got a text message. She's like, "I can't wait for you to see this movie." And then those text messages turned very quickly.
So, Brian, it opens up on the song, and the song is so good.
It is. It's so good. And it starts off. It starts off very. I mean, the skater girls, Candy and what's the other one's name? Sunshine.
Yeah,
something like
Sunshine
that.
And Candy.
Yeah,
they had names. Sunshine and
Candy. Yeah, they do, because he says it a few times throughout the movie. They're very happy girls. They're smiling the whole time.
Yeah,
just skating around. It looks like a good time is being had by lots of people in the very beginning of that movie.
Ryan. Correct me if I'm wrong. Are these our first nipples on the Disney Magic Hour, or have we been accustomed to the nipple before?
No, I would think this would probably be the first time. This is only their second PG movie. They didn't even release this under the Disney banner because they thought they could get teens in without putting the word Disney in front of it. But Black Hole was the first PG. This would be the second. I'm sure an animator probably slipped a nipple in there somewhere sometime.
True.
But this would be the first time that live action that we get that. Also, it's worth noting that the background of this, there is Occidental College, but also a good portion of the backgrounds when they're skating around is the Disney studio. So the old lot, you can look and see some of the old lot in the background.
How is it not a classic? Now it has Disney history in it.
Because there are other films where you can see the lot in the background.
I don't know what you're talking about. There's none other. This is the first one, last one, that's it. So basically, we meet a lot of the teams, Melissa, right? We meet a lot of the teams. They're all given an invitation, very Clue-like in the opening, you know, or Murdered by Death, I guess, which sort of that would have come first. And they're all given this invitation. And you're thinking, what's this, right?
I'm thinking that almost all of these people, like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, the sports guy drops the Gatorade on his head. You don't put Gatorade on your hair.
Oh, are you really? You watch this and you're like, this doesn't really mirror the reality of life.
I was like, why did he just dump that on his head?
So when you watched Little Mermaid,
that's my note.
When you got 3 minutes into it, you were like, well, mermaids aren't real. This movie's silly.
I don't know if mermaids are real or not.
I did. When we did that, I'm like, well, that's going to be really sticky later. Like,
no, actually, I actually do have one of those moments. When Harold threw all the food. My thing is, like, no fat man is throwing away his food.
Anyway?
He's not throwing away food. He just got served that food. You wouldn't throw it away. As a fat man, you eat that food. I found that. That was confusing to me, actually. Like, if we're really getting into that part.
But then he would throw the food later on, too, so that the maid would clean it up. He just likes to throw food.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
He also likes to eat food.
Yeah, but he loves eating food. I feel like he throws
put it
more
in
than
electronics.
He eats. Yeah. Aaron Hyde in electronics. So the basic setup of the thing is that Leon, hot-ass Leon, has a game to play. And for whatever reason that he's figured out, he knows that all these people, despite them seeming very, very uninterested upon the pitch of this idea of an all-night scavenger hunt, they're all going to come back. So that's the thing.
He reminded me of very, you know, Ready Player One, like, I've left these clues for you, like, kind of thing. Like, I've gathered you. I don't know. It just reminded me.
No, you're right. The chain of command is Willy Wonka, Midnight Madness, and then Ready Player One. You are actually pretty correct. So, this movie's just getting better as we go along. Sorry. Melissa.
I couldn't tell if they were in college or high school for a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like, I feel like that's every movie that has people who are supposed to be in high school. You're like, why do you all look 27?
Yeah.
But was Adam like 50? I don't understand how old Adam was supposed to be, Courtney. Because it seemed like he wasn't in school, but he wasn't doing anything else, but he was around the school a lot. Was he a teacher? What does he do?
He has some sort of job. I don't remember what
he's
it is.
He's a junior counselor, so I couldn't tell if he was I don't know his age, like if he's like a sophomore or a junior and he was counseling like the freshman kind of thing. Like, I don't know.
I mean, he does tell everyone, do you want to go back to my place and have some coffee? So at that point I was like, he's not probably in high school. So that gave me some frame of reference.
All right, that's true. So, so Leon is basically going to make this whole thing. He wants everyone to participate. And slowly but surely, they all wind up agreeing to it because they all have a deep-seated hatred of the other teams and they don't want any of them to win. If only they knew what the prize would be at that finish line, maybe they would have changed their minds because, Jesus, Leon, you couldn't have put a little bit of effort into that thing. But anyways, that's way down the line.
You put effort into the whole thing.
Brian, how do computers work?
You just put whatever you want into them and they tell you everything.
So
I've learned the more words you put in your search, the more accurate answers you get.
Actually, truth be told, Melissa is awful at Google. So this probably was like kind of enlightening.
I'm like, that's exactly what I do. And they
give
me
as much time as she spends on the internet. She's not very good at the Google.
But I'm better than all the people that I work with. So that's all that matters. I still impress them. So.
My goodness. My goodness.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hope they don't listen to this show.
No.
God knows no one else does. Actually, guys, I want a Game Master shirt. I just want to put that out there. My birthday comes once a year. Game Master. So I just want to put that out there. Okay, so Ryan, we have everyone now. They're all into it. Harold is cheating because Harold has been wronged by Adam. We are never told how. I just want to point that out. Did I miss that?
He didn't actually wrong him, but Harold's father thinks he's a screw up, and Adam isn't, and he's constantly comparing Harold to Adam, and why can't he be like Adam? And Adam is so when he's giving him his little speech and he pulls him into his office and Barf and the gang is standing outside watching him. That's when he lets him know, you know, about that Adam's, you know, that Adam's going to be doing it. So he better do it and he better win.
Barf and the gang, by the way, not a made up term. That is the actual thing. And Brian Fisherman's IMDb page, one of the featured photos is him in drag. With a top knot. That was the man who played Barf. He will eventually say the most famous line of this movie. It just hasn't happened yet. Ryan, though, all kidding aside, are you in the movie yet? Like, Harold is obviously the bad guy. Barf is the hero. Deborah Klinger and David Naughton cannot look at each other without it being insanely awkward.
Like, I really think everything at this point is awkward. Like, you don't have a real strong reason as to why certain teams get involved. You don't have like, you're sitting here going, wait, why are they involved? And what is the hatred here? And then before you can really think about that too much, you're giving your first clue and it's off to the races.
Well, no, I think we actually have a pretty good idea. Like, the jocks are involved because they're going to beat the nerds. The nerds obviously think that they can win.
I couldn't figure out why the football players, why the jocks got involved to begin with, because they literally just went and trashed everyone else, but hadn't shown an interest in being in the competition until, you know, and so they just showed up after torturing everyone's stuff.
I think though that's exactly what it was, is that they just didn't want the nerds to win or for the lady fraternity to win.
Or sorority.
Yeah,
fraternity?
All right, I'm gonna break this down right here. All right, there's five teams, right?
Yeah.
There's five teams.
So there's really only the blue team, which is Harold's team, and Adam's team's the yellow team. They're kind of against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other three are all kind of competing against each other because the girls, the red team, don't like the jocks because they trash their party. The nerds don't like the jocks. The jocks don't like either of the other two. So it's kind of like we got like a a mano a mano and a triangle of weird geeky jockey dancing love.
Okay, so here I'm going to ask, is the movie better if you got rid of the red and blue team and it was between the jocks, the chicks, and the nerds?
You just had all the wrong colors.
Did I?
Yeah.
Wait, let me turn this backwards.
If they did away with one of the teams, it would probably be better.
But they almost kind of did because they took the red team out of it for so long. And I was like, why are these people in it? Like, they made them go on these, like, misadventures of, like, they're going to be at a carnival. And then we're going to show the sold out food sign and say that's where the twins went, which, gosh, I'm not even going to get into that, but whatever.
Which then we jump, and we jump several, like, several teams jump several clues just to get back on track. And it's like, wait, no, you didn't, you're not doing this right.
Yeah, like, how are they not disqualified? Leon said you had to call in from each location. Like, also, this isn't even the age of mobile phones. So, like, no one had a payphone to be like, I have to call from this location and say I found it.
Leon did have a mobile phone. It was roughly the size of an airplane.
Yeah, but nobody else did.
Yeah, I don't know who he was calling. I forget who he was calling.
You know what impressed me the most when they got started? Was that somehow Leon had every car that they were going to drive in a magnet form already. especially when Harold's father got him that souped up van of
like the day before. Yeah.
Leon's got everyone bugged.
The mystery machine, but like all of them had like perfect recreations of their cars as little magnets.
Leon
that
has been spying.
Was impressive.
That whole board was impressive.
Oh, yeah. That board was cool. Yeah.
I like how it lit up from the back. But yeah. Leon must have been spying on everybody because he also knew, like, don't worry, they'll all come together. They'll find teams. Like, I know their psychology.
Yeah, he was Mr. Body.
He's creepy.
He was Mr. Body.
He was really creepy. He went on to become a serial killer.
He's got serial killer hair. He really does. Yo, speaking of Leon, Ryan, how large is his apartment?
Yeah, for this being L.A. and him having what looks like a whole floor of a building to himself, that seems fairly impressive.
Yeah. Thought that was really good. Courtney, when I say half shirts for men, yes, no, maybe?
I'm going to go with a strict never, unless it's also with hot pants and 6-inch heels. Then I'm all for it.
I don't know if I'll say never, because like if Chris Hemsworth was sporting one, I'd be down for that.
All right.
That was the Chris Hemsworth of the 80s, that guy. That's who that was.
Whoa.
There are two hard no's from the ladies over here.
Yo, Marvin's yellow team, Marvin, his jean shorts were so jeans and so high. They were so, so high. It showed so much leg that it was a couple of shots where I felt that he should cover up. Thought it was uncomfortable for me. Is Flinch the best character in the whole movie?
Probably. I mean, if we had to choose, probably. Because
you have to choose, I'm telling you.
I mean, he definitely isn't a racist misogynist that's like half these people, so.
All right, so who's a misogynist? Okay, Harold. Outside of him, who is?
I would say the jocks have they're
just jocks.
But you can't, no.
But they're assholes towards everyone. It's not like they're assholes towards, like, they don't, do they say anything specifically towards the women? Like, do they make, like, women-y comments?
Yeah, they don't, that's them? The thing.
I don't know if I remember, Courtney? That's why. Courtney, do you remember?
I don't think that they specifically say anything, but I would say that the overall feeling of this movie is very misogynistic. There are some things that are said. There's a 12-year-old kid that's looking through a telescope and says, if I'm lucky, I may get a view of Venus's two moons.
Yes, yes.
While she's undressing. That happens.
Does Venus have two moons, by the way?
It does, but still.
That's not what he's talking about.
Also, Venus was behind him, so whatever.
Yeah. It was just uncomfortable. After, like, the fourth boob joke in this movie, like, it wasn't just, like, a boob joke. It was, like, very blatant, like, body image disrespect things. I was like, yeah, I think I'm probably out.
Okay, so do you chalk this up, though, because you just described almost every sophomore kind of comedy that happened between Animal House and 1986. Like there was a long stretch of stuff like this.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there wasn't, and I certainly do think it was a product of its time, and I think that there was a period of time where like that kind of humor and that kind of comedy was acceptable and kind of expected, but now it's just it's uncomfortable to watch. I don't know how I would have felt at the time because I mean I wasn't alive, so I don't really know, but now I definitely was uncomfortable by a lot of it.
Yeah, it definitely, I understand, like, you know, product of its time, but there is a point where it's like, you know, it's just not, it's not fun to watch because you can't, there's, and I haven't seen Animal House in a very long time, so like there's a lot of movies I can't speak to, but like having sat through this, like I couldn't even like just brush it aside and being like, let me just watch the movie, because it was so ingrained in everything that it was just like unenjoyable. And I think the fact that it focused on Adam so much, and I feel like he is the worst person in the world, and the fact that
really in this movie he is the worst.
He is a terrible older brother, and I understand like older brothers are not always the best, but he is literally the, like, if I saw somebody treating their younger brother like that, there would be no way I would be attracted to him. But then they still wrote it that she's attracted to him.
But she does leave him once she sees him acting like an ass.
But then she goes back to him the end of the
when he redeems himself. I mean, in the most way that a comedy like this is going to have a character redeem himself.
I know, but
yeah, they have.
So I think
arc.
The Menendez brothers are much worse brothers.
Well, that's not really up for debate, I would say.
Just gonna say, if we're talking about bad
brothers.
Well,
technically, they watched out for each other, didn't they?
That's a good point. Yeah, that's right.
They're horrible sons, is what they are.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, all right. So Melissa.
I agree. The overall tone is very much that, but I don't think any one of the groups that I can remember were overly, they weren't like the jocks were not like, oh, you're women type of thing. Like they just were jerks.
Yeah, because like the clue itself, like the melons clue, the two big melons, isn't any particular team like making that joke, but. It's in the film, therefore it's sort of part of it. The only hugely blatant thing that I think someone says is the old woman when she calls the black cop an ape, which is not good. Like, that's bad.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it's written. I legitimately don't think that it's written from a racist point of view.
No, they just had jokes in there that in today's day and age, they're not the best in its, you know, because I mean, like, there was a time, you know, even when I was younger, like, where you say, like, you know, please, oh, pick up the candy-o, like, that was like your quote unquote Spanish, but like now, like, we know, like, that's not, you know, funny, like, you know, at one time it was, now it's not, you know, so it's like, it's just the overall tone. Yeah, I don't think it was purposefully written to be any of these ways, but now it is. And it's so inundated in the film that for a lot of it, it was just like, I didn't like anybody. I really didn't like the main characters that it was focusing on. And it just made it like hard to watch.
I liked Emilio.
He was so annoying.
I like Emilio. I like Donna. Yeah, I like Emilio and Donna.
I like the Pinball City proprietor.
Yeah.
Tell who is that Pinball City proprietor?
That'd be a man named Paul Rubens, better known as, you could say Beryl, you could say Pee Wee Herman. Mm. There's a multitude you could say there, but like when he showed up, I'm like, hey!
It's going to be okay. What could possibly go wrong with Paul Rubens in the room?
A giant foam cowboy hat with like a giant cowboy outfit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he would keep that later and give it to Lawrence Fishburne and be like, run with this. Like, all right. Yeah, sure.
They ruined that poor man's
arcade. I mean, even the character of Eddie Deason. So it's, my question towards this then now, whatever. If that's how movies should be judged, which I'm not saying is right or wrong, Grease is a miserable, miserable film that no one should enjoy, because that girl legitimately turns herself into something she is not, starts smoking just to win over the guy who was an asshole to her for most of the movie.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, every movie is perfect and you know.
No, no, I'm not saying
no,
that.
No, but I'm just saying, like, there are movies like Grease. You're right. Grease has a lot of bad messaging, you know, that one in particular. But, like, there are pieces of Grease that are enjoyable. There are pieces of Grease that are not as, you know, terrible as that. You know, letting Rizzo have, you know, like, more of a... She's not going to be, like, you know, a wimpy girl. Like, she's going to be, you know, in command of her own, you know, being, can be, like, a really progressive thing for that time, you know? So, like, there are elements where it's...
She's a villain of the movie, though, pretty much. I mean, they play her like the villain.
They
for
play
a
her like a villain.
Against Sandy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And plus, the, you know, with that, too, like, she is, but then they also play her as the slut of the movie. In Grease.
Yeah, but they also... I mean, the way that she handles it is different.
Yes.
She,
no, yeah,
she handles it. It's not just, she's not just the slut. She addresses it. And she, I mean, we know she has that song where, you know, maybe she's not as strong as she appears to be, but she is handling it and addressing it. It's addressed in the movie. I think the difference is in this movie, there are blatant, outright statements and situations that occur that, well, I guess that's in Grease too. But,
it is. It's in Grease too. That's and definitely Grease too. Actually, a lot worse in Grease too.
I think where it comes down to is it comes down to your character development, and there's not really a sympathetic character here. Mm. There's not really someone you're like, yeah, okay, I get behind this, except for, you know, Emilio. Or if, you know, you're supposed to like Michael J. Fox, he's really whiny for 90% of this movie. There's no one that you can look at and go, I feel sympathy towards this character. I want this character to succeed, other than I've tied my bandwagon to this color, this team. I want to go with that. And that's where, and so when you don't have something that you're, where you're tying yourself to a character, you end up watching a scene and going, oh God, I hope they don't start groping the waitress's breasts. Like that's where you end up instead of focusing on anything else that's happening.
But what's crazy is that no one does in that scene. Like, they actually go out of their way not to do the thing that you would think. Like, Harold is just going to grope this woman, you know? Like, so that's the thing. Like, it's a weird... I'm not excusing you. I'm not excusing the other stuff. But what I'm saying is the movie is very bipolar in that sense where...
Yeah, you have overly shots of, like, her chest the whole time.
With some of the other things that happened, why didn't someone just jump into her cleavage? Why didn't one of the men wind up face down in her cleavage on the ground and then reads a thing? Like, that's incredible that they didn't go that way because of the other stuff that they did. Yeah. So it's weird. It's like, it's almost like they're sort of aware of it.
And you said it very well. Like, it's a very bipolar, because even the red team, the old girls team, they go into the one bar, and the second the one guy hits on the one girl, she clocks him in the face.
Yeah.
And, you know, so like she is, you know, she like kind of stands up for herself. And even the girls who they make fun of, the twins who are very heavy set, and they make, you know, it's kind of like the butt of a lot of jokes. You know, they're out there dancing on the dance floor, and like they seem to, like, you know,
they're like the life of the party in that scene.
They're like the life of the party, and you know, from that aspect, they seem to embrace themselves. They don't care what other people say about them. So it seems like, you said, both you guys, everyone has a good point. It's like very bipolar in the way it portrays everybody.
Because it's on a line that sometimes tiptoes over and then it wants to tiptoe back from. Even in the way the fact that, you know, they threw the nod to Disney in there. You know, they had the Mickey Mouse star. They also made sure it's covered in cigarette butts. Like, there's a line here where they're trying to like show that they're irreverent and that they're, you know, hip to the times. And then they step over occasionally and then they come back and then they're like, oh, but we're still Disney. We don't want to go too far over that line. It just makes it uncomfortable and disjointed.
Because the other, I mean, like, Brian, talking towards the, you know, the scene where, like, the two red team girls are dancing, honestly, is that scene developed? I was like, oh, God, they're going to have everyone laughing at them. And it's like, oh, no, they didn't.
No, they all
had everyone
fun.
Was
Which is weird. All, like, again, like, my brain was telling me, like, oh, this is going to go really badly. Because but then they don't do that. So
you're right.
That's it. You know, like Ebert was saying, like, there's...
Way. Like, they train you, like, oh, we're going to have the sold-out food sign, so that's where the fat girls must have been. But then, like, yeah, then they have the scene where, like, everyone's having fun with them, or, yeah, like, they're helping solve things, you know.
So it's like Ebert said, like, there's a part of this film that is actually kind of, like, warm-hearted and fun. The white team and the red team kind of teaming up and, that, like, finding fun, common, yeah, ground. I honestly, I really think that if it was the red team, the white team, and the green team, right, I think a lot, yep, of the problems that people have with the movie somewhat disappear because, holy shit, there's a Latino character called Blade who doesn't say a word and only sharpens his knife while he looks at people.
And I didn't even know he was around.
The best part is in the airport.
Yeah, that was the only time where I was like, oh, he's around? Like, I did not even realize he was a character until that part. And I was like, oh, you just had him here because he won't give up his knife.
Like, yeah, he wouldn't give up his knife and wouldn't.
Well, he was threatening Michael J. Fox with a knife, too.
I don't remember.
Yo, Sad Scott music is hysterical. Every time Michael J. Fox pops up on screen, it's just like, like, it's just Peanuts, Charlie Brown walking away.
They forgot his birthday, though.
I had the same thought. I had, like, Bruce Banner from the Hulk, like, when he's walking, like, his in music. Yeah.
I was. Something that, like, actually really bugs me in this movie, despite my enjoying it, every time someone figures out a clue, it's either, of course, or that's it. Those are the two options. Like, This is a video game and you have two dialogue options. And you can, yeah, you can go to the left, you can go to the right, but guess what? You're going to say, of course, or that's it. And that's it.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a very big fatal flaw with that game. You just need one team to solve it, and everyone else has to be in the same general area. Yeah. And then they just follow the team to the next clue.
Which happens
multiple times, like Courtney pointed out.
Yeah.
It happens multiple times.
Yeah. Or find them five clues later and be like, hey, great, there they are.
Yeah, well, that's what the green team. They give up, and all of a sudden they see the car, and they're like, okay, well, we'll be back in this then.
Yes, Courtney?
Can we please talk about the heart and soul scene?
Yes.
I wanted to get to that. So do you think this is where Big got it from? Because I'm pretty sure this is where Big got it from.
I mean, I don't know if that's where Big got it from, but I just don't understand how this even happened.
I don't believe any of them actually know how to play that music.
I guarantee they are all rich.
But now
they're all rich
now,
boys.
We don't know they're all rich boys.
Melissa, now you're why? Because he's Barf is named Barf. He can't play.
Because he doesn't enunciate a full sentence.
So that means it.
So he's a savant.
Wasn't someone deaf? Who was deaf? No. Made music. Beethoven?
Beethoven?
So Melissa, you would have been like, well, you're deaf. How can you make music? This is Melissa Beck, and that's how people talked back in Mozart.
A German
talk. Melissa has a powdered wig on right now, just in case anyone was wondering. I don't know where she got it, but it's here.
Here's my point to refute Melissa a little bit here. That song is the one song everybody who thinks they're even a little musically inclined knows how to play. So at the School of Music, you would hear some kid who wasn't a music major walk into a piano and to a practice room, and you'd hear.
Well, that part, yeah, but not the other part.
Everyone would scream. So more people know how to play that than you would think. I bet one of them at least knew how to play it.
Let's take Courtney out of the equation. Anyone else in this room able to play that song?
I used to be able to. Yes.
Well, okay, but not that part. But the other part.
No, the other person that I would play it with, someone else would always know that part.
Yeah,
that part's easier than the other part.
Yeah, probably a little bit, actually. Look, guys, Melissa's just a very anti-Emilio because Emilio's the best. The way he screws with Harold is really, really effective.
Yeah.
I mean, Harold should murder him.
Yeah, they should really not be friends because that is not a good relationship. But.
May I please put an idea towards the floor?
Mm.
Okay, floor idea. I think Harold just needs better friends. I think that, like, his father has done him wrong, and his friends are even worse.
I mean, his girlfriend's trying to make him healthy, so she's
his
not
terrible.
His
girlfriend is trying to starve him, and that is not how you lose weight.
She's saying he shouldn't have marshmallows. I don't think that...
No,
she
but,
wants
the, but then...
Salad.
He tries to have a healthy breakfast of a handful of eggs, and she smacks them out of his hand.
Yeah, at the end, when the buffet is there, he's like downing strawberries, and she's yelling at him
because he's inhaling everything.
because she didn't let him eat anything. And if she would have just let him have some food, maybe just a little bit, he wouldn't have put the marshmallows in the car, and then the good guys would have won.
The good guys won.
Let's just be fair. He was just going to get the plate full of food and then throw it on the ground. That's all he was going to do.
Probably.
Courtney, of all the bad music cues in this, I want to say that the least earned music cue, without doubt for me, goes to the dramatic brother hug near the end of the film. That is the most, like, just mind-blowing use of Gone with the Wind-esque moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not deserving of that. I mean, it's par for the course for this movie to me, though. Everything musically unexpected happened, in my opinion. So I was just like, oh, okay, I guess that's going to happen now.
Anyone else? I mean, I really actually like this one particular joke. When they were going up and down the elevator, there's one point where they went to the very top floor because they were like in the express. The door opened. The guy was cleaning the floor. And Adam's like, good morning. And the door just closed. And I was like, you know what? That might be the most low-key hysterical point of this entire movie. Because it was just the way he said it. I was like, I actually really liked that moment a lot. Like, that was damn funny. Melissa, was there anything you liked about the movie?
I liked when Flinch kind of, you know, got his, you know...
groove back?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go with that, sure. And, you know, just kind of stood in front of the girls in the car. And like, I'm going to take your car for your spin and then get your numbers.
You had no problem with that?
I had problems, but it was the least on the thing.
Theft. Carjacking.
He basically carjacked those girls.
If it was Grand Theft Auto, he would have...
He didn't murder them, though, so it was okay.
Well, it's because he would have had to give them money first and then murder them to take the money back. That's the Grand Theft way. That's how you do that. No, okay, so you liked Flinch... becoming a man, more man than man.
Sure.
Okay. Anything else? I think that's the bottom of the well on those answers. Courtney, what did you... Did you like anything? I mean, it seemed like you liked portions of the movie.
Yeah, I love the theme song. I texted my dad and I was like, I'm sure you saw this in the theater, but I'm going to send you this song. And he was like, I haven't seen this since 1980. Thank you. This is awesome. So I love the song. I'll never forget it. I liked the Pabst Blue Ribbon part. I thought that was fun when the guy sang the PBR song.
Really good. That whole sequence is really funny. That man's name is Dirk Blocker, and that's incredible.
Yeah. And lastly, I liked when Michael J. Fox took his retainer out of his mouth and handed it straight to another person.
And had no problem with him like totally twisting it around.
Yeah, he just took it.
Guys, they were trying to win the thing.
Those things are expensive.
They were trying to win the thing.
It was also just in his freaking mouth. Ew.
What do you want him to wait? They had to run. They had to get to the room. Leon is waiting there. And so's Piglet. God damn it.
For Piglet.
Ryan.
Yep.
Is there anything that doesn't work in this film?
Have you been listening? That list is really long. We started that list this evening. There's a lot of things. You know what does work is towards the end when they all get to the hotel and you have, you know, the one team dressed up as bellboys, the one team dressed up as maids, one team dressed up. Yeah. You know, you have the number of the room down in the parking lot. Like that's the stuff that works in this movie. Like towards the end, I'm like, right. Is it done possibly better in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World or Rat Race? Sure. Yes. But it reminded me of those movies. I'm like, oh, this is the madcap kind of thing I was looking for.
Yeah, I agree with what Ebert said, that it's too slow in the beginning. Like, it should be more manic the way
It's an hour and 52 minutes also.
Like, it could be an hour and a half.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that long.
Although... Mad, 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 Mad World is what, like almost 3 hours long?
Yes.
So there is a hell of a balance if you have like Hollywood legends, I guess that kind of also helps. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only part of the movie that I watched and I was like, well, this doesn't really make any sense is how they play video games. You do not beat arcade games in 33 seconds or whatever it was that Michael J. Fox was playing. Also, Jesus, did they just barely not get sued by Star Wars, I guess. Because, yes, Ryan, tell me.
So that's an actual video game. That game was a legitimate video game in 1980, except that they had to rebuild the case for this movie because it's actually a cockpit game. Like, you were actually, like, in an enclosed game, so they had to make the open console. But, yeah, Star Wars had to have had something to go on with that because that's a TIE fighter, yeah. And those words, that's a Star Wars font if I've ever seen one.
It's not the same screen, though, as the old Vector arcade game that I was familiar with, but I'm assuming the one that I was familiar with didn't come out till more like in the mid-80s. This probably wasn't out yet. But you could see like, oh, wow, this is where they eventually go with that Vector game. Because that was the one that you also sat down in. I used to play that game all the time. What else do we have here?
We have to talk about the best scene in the movie. We haven't talked about
Brian, that. Please tell me. What's going on? Do you know how to break down words?
Sure. The blue team is in the van there. I forget exactly how did they get those, all the letters they had to put together?
Jesus, I don't even
remember. Oh, that's skipping my mind right now.
Weren't they the notes on the piano?
Yes, they were the notes on the piano.
They were the notes on the piano. And my favorite barf was he's trying to decipher them. And he comes up with this word. It's fagabeefy.
Fagabeefy?
Fagabeefy?
So good. And, look at that. Not a laugh out of Courtney.
Yeah, Courtney. I mean, God, that's my Wi-Fi network, Courtney. It's fagabeefy. All right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things came together after figuring that.
Oh, man.
It's so good. It's so good. The bartender smoking a cigarette while serving beer is one of my favorite things in this movie also.
Yeah.
The brewery clue may have been was one of the points that I was like, no one could have set this up.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And like, how would they stumble onto that one? That one was really kind of, yeah.
Every 80s film doesn't understand asthma. It continues in this one, or it starts in this one. Don't know if it continued. What else we have here? I don't know. I think that's pretty much it. That's the whole movie, I'm pretty sure. Oh, I put down, Jesus, Adam's a real asshole, huh?
Yep.
So that's something.
Yep.
I felt like the nerds really didn't solve many clues, even though they were the nerds. And then they all of a sudden had waiters when they were on the mini golf course. Oh, I was like, where did they get these waiters from?
One of my favorite things was at the end, the white team and the red team go through all the trouble of like dressing up like bellboys and dressing up like maids, and then just walk right in front of the people or just kick them out 3 minutes ago. It's like, what was your plan? Like, what the hell are you doing?
They were playing Hitman and they were blending in.
It's good stuff.
Clearly.
Good stuff.
What was everybody's favorite clue out of all of them? Which ones did you guys think was the best one? I mean, the first one to me was probably one of the best ones because all of them went to different places to start.
Yeah.
So it started off on a good foot where they're all, you know, they all, you know, were looking for the stars in different ways. One group was looking for like the map to the stars. The other ones were the Walk of Fame, you know, so, you know, that one was kind of cool. And then of course the supercomputer, the one that ended up beating the chess guy eventually, that one comes up with the answer right away, and then it gets going, but then it devolves quickly from there. Like after that, I don't think any team actually solved anything on their own after that first clue. I think like only one, like everyone solved that first one,
and then everyone
like they
just
figured it out. Then after that, I think only like one or two teams solved them, and everyone else kind of just like rode coattails the rest of the way.
I did like the one that was spelled out in the in the brewery when it was like Mr. Carson's obese male child.
That was pretty good.
And then they were like, oh, Johnny's Fat Boy Burgers.
Yeah, like, that made sense. Like that line of thing made sense. I would say Flinch jumping up in front of everyone with arms spread like a bird and going through it. It was just this side of Teen Witch. Like, it was that close.
I love that. I watched it 2 times. Both times I was cracking up. It's the best part of this movie.
But then what I love is that, you know, not Chachi, Dave Naughton, he's like huge M. And I'm like, who the hell would have picked up on that? But that's one of the things of this movie. Ryan, favorite clue?
It was the find the 8800 keys. Mm. Just because the minute they said it, my Dick Tracy brain kicked in. Because there's a character 88 keys in that movie. And I went, oh, this is a piano clue. Like, immediately knew, like I know where this one's going.
And then Ryan immediately started playing Heart and Soul on the piano. All right.
I picked up the bass and played Peter Gunn. That's what I did. Yeah.
So now I know what I'm going to do when I go to Courtney's again, and she has her keyboard behind her.
I will cut the cord and throw it in the trash before you arrive.
All right. I think we pretty much covered that movie, but we got to ask some questions, right? We have some very important questions, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Melissa, what are the three questions that we ask of every film?
We're going to ask what the iconic shot is.
Mm.
We're going to figure out if there was a moral or an emotional pull to the film. And
so many.
If it succeeded at either or both. And we'll see if it still holds up.
Okay, so let's start from the morals. I'm going to give this to Ryan because he's the most even-headed of all of us. I'm going to let him handle this first. So we can hear what he says and just go, what Ryan said.
I don't think there was a moral to this. I think it was trying to achieve an emotional connection. I think it was trying to get there. I don't think it succeeds on the levels it wanted to. We all have very strong emotions about this movie one way or the other, but that it was not its intended goal. So I'm going to say it did not reach its goal.
Brian, do you want to counterpoint that?
The morals were plentiful in this movie. No. I don't think there was no real... I wouldn't say there was a moral. I mean, I guess the message they were trying to get through was the Michael J. Fox, if you have a whiny brother, make sure like you pay attention to them and they won't do bad things type of thing. But I just think it was just meant to be a fun movie. I don't think it was really trying to get across any deep meaning or messages. And you know, it was just... It was just the great all-nighter.
Just the great all-nighter. Melissa, I know you have a different thought on this.
No. Oh, no. I don't think it succeeded in any morals. I don't know if that was the main focus, because while, you know, the main focus was Adam and, you know, what a jerk he was to his brother.
Oh, my God.
I don't think that was, like, their goal was, like,
Jezebel.
His redemption story. Okay. I think it was supposed to be, like, fun, whatever, you know.
Okay. Courtney, do you agree with the previously said opinions on morals?
Yeah, pretty much. If there's going to be a moral, it's going to be don't be a dick to your kid brother. There was no emotion for me because every time they just stared at each other and then there was finally a kiss and it was some awkward crap that I could have never seen and I would have been fine. So, yeah, no, didn't succeed at anything, and I don't think there was much in there, really.
Yeah, the only, like, emotional connection that I think kind of works is when, was it Donna and Eugene are on the bike?
Yeah, that was
it's
cute.
It's a really cute little that moment. Cute. Yeah, it's a really cute little moment. That's pretty much
and,
that's sort
and I guess what's, what's his name? The tuxedo guy.
Yeah, Flinch.
Yeah, like, you know, he kind of has a, you know, where he gains confidence in himself, and you know, so you know, he had a little bit of a growth, but basically that's the only signs of any type of character growth in this movie. I will say that
iconic shot. Start with Brian. We'll start with Brian.
Can there be any other shot than the table in the van with the Faga Beefy spelled out? I don't think that there can be.
That's my vote. My vote is the Faga Beefy table. Ryan, you have another vote, sir, I believe.
It is Paul Reubens standing between a pair of pinball machines, like just ready to have a showdown in his Western gear.
And you know what? Just back to the point, when he shoots out all those coins, they spent like half those goddamn quarters on the floor.
Yeah.
I just don't bother picking them up.
Also, that was a good trade. The guy gave him like a $5 bill. He gave him like 106 coins.
I don't think that conversion ratio was correct.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, then again, you find out that every game is 4 tokens to play. And Afterburner is 12. Ugh, Afterburner. Melissa, what's the iconic shot? Is your mic not working? What's going on over there? Are you okay?
Maybe Leon's map?
I like how you're just describing something in the movie. Not honestly, a particular moment, not a thing, not a shot. Just a thing in the film.
There was nothing that stuck out like, you know, this movie is this. Like,
okay.
Because there was never like a point where I was like, oh, they're all the cars are there. Like, there's never like a good shot of everybody or everything, like, in a way that makes it like, this is good.
There is actually one shot, just want to highlight. When they're all getting their first clue from Leon and they're all like in a semicircle and they're outside, everyone is like in a driveway. The blue team is like in the middle of goddamn Manhattan. There are skyscrapers behind them, a ton of cars, but then everyone else is just in a driveway.
Oh, I don't even remember.
And they're just right next to each other. Like they're not far. All right, so you don't really have one, huh?
No.
Courtney?
As much as I would like to go with Pee Wee Herman on this one, I kind of think that if I saw that single shot 10 years from now when I've completely forgotten about Midnight Madness, I would be like, oh, that's from Pee Wee's Big Adventure or something. Like, I think I would just probably not even realize it. And it hurts me to say this, but I think it's going to be the shot of Barf in the Heart and Soul scene with his dumb face. Because I don't think I could ever forget the stupid face he's making.
Such a good
face.
He's
not even looking at the keys.
No.
He's pure joy. He's pure joy in that movie.
The music is in him. He doesn't need to look at the keys. Gee, look, you know who doesn't look at the keys? Ray Charles. Man ain't looked at the keys ever. You can say he can't play. You're a mean person. Deaf people.
You talk about Adam.
Music.
You talk about Adam.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Look at you.
I'm not mean to my younger brother.
You don't have one.
Exactly.
That we know of. There may have been one.
There may have been.
Faggot beefy. Yeah, I'll go again. Yeah, faggot beefy. Does this movie hold up? Melissa.
I don't think so. I don't think for me it was something I'd go back and watch and enjoy because there's just too many problems with it. Like, there's problems in, you know, other movies like Grease or whatever, but, like, I can get around them just because a lot of other parts are enjoyable. Like, there was minimal enjoyment that counteract the other parts. And I really don't like Adam.
Are you sure you don't? Because you seem conflicted throughout the whole show on your opinion of Adam. Brian, does this film hold up?
For me, this film holds up, yes, 100%. For the vast majority of people, probably not. I think if this was a film that you had watched when you were younger and you have some sort of attachment to, yeah, I think it's still fun. I see the problems with it, but I just, you know, I think it tries to counterbalance it with other things. I don't think there's anything, you know, malicious in the making of this movie or the people that were making it. You know, and again, not that it was right, but this was par for the course during this, you know, this time of these types of movies. But I had fun with it. You know, I still had fun with it. I still got that song stuck in my head a week after watching the movie. And yeah, I think it holds up if you have some attachment, if you have some background with this movie.
I'll agree with that. I definitely think it has something to do with like how much this movie was a running thing between me and my friends for a long time. I will say as much as it does hit some of those potholes of the 80s, it does not hit them as hard as some of the other movies of the 80s. Like, this is the most Disney-fied version of that garbage.
Yeah.
Not excusing it. That doesn't excuse it. But I have fun with it.
But it's not Porky's.
Yeah, it's not Porky's. It's not Revenge of the Nerds. It's not something like that. I have fun with it. I think it's funny. I do think it's a little slow. They could definitely cut 10, 15 minutes or just make it a little more haphazard the way the last 20 minutes go. That was a much better pace. And I think it would have aided towards this movie in particular. The biggest problem is the yellow team. There's really, outside of Flinch for those last 10 minutes, there's really no one very cool or fun you want to root for, and we're supposed to root for them.
I mean, I like Marvin, but he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, Marvin was the, he was a black Ghostbuster. That's what they treated him as. Yeah. You know, he's just sort of there to have this a little bit of balance in the characters. But I really think there was a red team, white team, and green team. But for me, it holds up. But again, massive caveat. I don't think that you could show this to many people now, and they're going to latch onto it. No. Ryan, how about you?
No, I'll agree to that. But it's the same thing. Of, you know, last week, I have an attachment to Black Hole. I will watch the Black Hole again. I really don't think anyone else should ever put themselves through that again. It's just that I have that connection. It's the same thing here.
So after listening to your show, the show last week, I have to watch that movie now because I don't remember any of it, and I have to watch it.
But yeah, I think for a modern artist, no, this movie does not hold up. But if you have some connection to it, whether it was, you know, you became part of that click following of it when it started making a return on HBO, or you were, you know, one of the people who saw it in theaters or as a child and loved it, then it's going to have a piece that you can carry. But overall, no, I'm not going to recommend this to anyone.
And I think that's what frustrates me most about this film is because, like, I've seen other films who have this concept, and I love this concept. Like, I love people solving riddles. I loved Ready Player One for that. But, like, this, like, didn't do enough.
Have you ever seen It's a Mad, 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 Mad World?
I don't think so.
Oh, you should watch it. I think you would love it. Yeah. Courtney?
I'm going to go with no. This does not hold up for me. And even though it has a lot of the same issues, if I'm going to watch something like this movie from a similar era, I would rather watch Revenge of the Nerds. Like, I think that's a much better movie than this movie. And again, that speaks to what we were talking about, too, with, like, the whole nostalgia factor. I watched that movie a ton when I was a kid. I absolutely love that movie.
My goodness.
So just like you guys have that connection with this movie, I have that connection with Revenge of the Nerds, and that in a lot of ways this movie did remind me of Revenge of the Nerds. You have the whole gameplay thing, the mm-hmm. you know, the sorority fraternity thing, but yeah, I don't think it holds up because there's just a lot of kind of gross stuff that happens throughout, but I can see how it would be something enjoyable to go back to for other people.
Yeah, like, I love Revenge of the Nerds, but that movie is also rancid in some of the things it does. But the overall message is one that is very positive.
Yes.
So it also kind of has that thing where
it's got its
heart in the right place, but it's but other parts just haven't caught up just yet.
Yeah, like the bounce house scene. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so yeah, it hits that same thing, but it's I understand it because I'm the same with Pete. I
bounce house.
Revenge of the Nerds fan.
All right, guys. Well, hey, that's our show for this week. What are we doing next? Watcher? Is it Watcher in the Woods?
Yes.
Is that with Bette Davis?
Yes.
Oh my God, that movie terrified me as a kid.
I've heard she has some eyes.
Her eyes, something about it. There's something about them. Those Bette Davis. Nope, it'll never work as a song. But you know it does work as a song? Bum ba dum 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 ba bum 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 bum. Ryan, help me out with second part. Bum ba dum doom doom doom. No? Oh my God, betrayed.
You understand that she lives down the street from me and she can get to me faster.
That's right. I will go to Ryan's house and I will end it. I'll end it all.
All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with Watcher in the Woods.
When are we going to get to Oliver and Company? That's all I'm here
when
for.
When does it come out?
Not soon enough, apparently.
Well, it'll be this time next year before we get to Oliver and Company.
No, you bite your tongue.
How many more movies do we have till Oliver and Company? You want to look it up right now?
Oliver's definitely the 80s, because Oliver's...
definitely. So is Little Mermaid, so I don't know.
Melissa, why should you worry?
I don't know. I don't know why I should care, but, you know, those were my 80s movies. Like, that's what I'm here for.
What about Fox and the Hound?
I'm sorry that we're boring you. Oh, my God.
I'm not saying I'm bored. No, I'm not saying I'm bored. I'm just saying, like, because you guys all have, like, these nostalgic, you know, connections to all these things. That's just going to be a box of tissues. Oh, my gosh, guys, we didn't talk about a box of tissues. We didn't talk about Dumbo trailer.
We didn't. We'll save that for next week. We'll save it for next week. 2 weeks.
I'm not watching it.
Box tissues. That's all I know.
Yeah, next couple of movies coming up. We got Watcher in the Woods. We got Popeye. We got Dragon Slayer. And then we got Fox and the Hound. When the hell does he? Oliver and Company's 1988.
That's what I said. We got a while.
Yeah, we got a while till
this
then.
Time, next year.
Girl, you got to go through Return to Oz first.
Woo! No, we didn't even go to Oz first. We're not going Return to Oz.
We are absolutely going to Return of Oz. Oh, yes, we are. We're going Flight of the Navigator.
I haven't seen any of these
movies. Some Beach Boys music. That's going to be great.
This is about when I started.
You just pointed at Oliver and Company.
Yeah. All the other ones. No.
Tron. Nope. Tron, girl. Tron. Something Wicked This Way Comes. Nope. We've got some goddamn bangers coming up. Love it. Love it. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with Betty Davey Dies and Watcher in the Woods. Till next time. Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Courtney.
Goodnight, Courtney.
Say goodnight, Ryan.
Goodnight, Ryan.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Good night, Brian.
Good night, Pete. Sleep tight. I don't know why I said that. Bye.